Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast, our off-season and lockout edition. I'm Joe Galina, and as always, I'm joined by my buddy, Scott Chu. Acknowledge him because he is a force to be reckoned with in the world of fantasy baseball. How's it going there, Scott?
It's a weak force, but it's a force. Doing pretty good, you know, enjoying myself. I'm about to go to a curling tournament this weekend. Cool. The Lupus Spiel over at the Four Seasons Curling Club. It's a charity event to raise money for the Let's Cure Lupus Foundation. So that'll awesome. Be a lot of fun. You get to like curl with like a celebrity skip. So I'll be curling with someone who has, I believe, competed at the Olympics. Wow. I wish I remember who it was, and I don't. So that'll be a lot of fun. And, you know, just hoping we get to talk about real baseball things happening
right
soon.
Right. Yeah, because under normal circumstances, right, we'd be talking about the happenings surrounding baseball's winter meetings right now, right? But, you know, that's always like one of my favorite times of year because there's always a lot of activity, trades and whatnot. But, hey, you know, with the lockout, we all knew it was coming. And we're left to look back fondly on that week's worth of free agent signings that led up to the work stoppage, and also watching replays of old baseball games and Ken Burns' awesome baseball documentary on MLB Network. I mean, I missed the Hot Stove show, but I mean, I guess we could do mock drafts, and you've got your baseball card collection to add to as well, right?
Yeah, and I mean, this doesn't look as so at this moment, it doesn't look as bleak as like 2020, where there was nothing. We didn't even know if they'd play. I mean, technically, we don't know if they'd play. It does sound like they will be able to come to an agreement at some point. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we're going to have an interrupted season. We might, but I'm not expecting some kind of like crazy 60 game season or anything like that. So it's just going to be a dull early winter.
Yeah, I mean, and like I've said on the past on this podcast, man, I really hope that there is no interruption to the start of the season because baseball can't afford it, right? Football's so darn popular, so is basketball. MLB needs to start on time. I mean, and, you know, fantasy implications of the lockout, man, what do you think? Players not able to access MLB facilities right now, right? I'm sure they do most of their off-season conditioning on their own anyway. But, hey, you know, for players coming off of a wacky injury where they'd benefit from having access to the MLB facilities and even just being able to have a Zoom call with a team trainer. I mean, I guess that's, you know, is that one way of looking at some of the implications of the day-to-day aspect of this?
Man, that's so hard to do. It's so hard to think about, like, we already have a really hard time knowing how a player will heal from injury, for example. So how could we even try to predict how well they'll heal from injury using their private doctors right. instead of the team doctors, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, in fact, if they're a Met, I'll expect them to heal faster, right? Like,
very good.
I mean, I'm not going to lean into that too much. There's like this theoretical group of players who are on the 40-man roster because, for example, this doesn't impact minor leaguers because they're not part of the union.
Right.
So they're all, I mean, they can even still be traded. Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about like fringy 40-man roster guys who are coming off a serious injury because they're in this position where it's not like Acuna, who can afford whatever doctor he wants.
Right.
Right. Or Trout or something like that. It's going to be these guys that are like already borderline, like already like barely on the roster. And so they might be able to afford a doctor, but probably not close to what his team is able to provide. Right. So I guess if you really want something to research, I guess you could look for those players. Mm-hmm. But even then, you're not going to actually have, you're not going to learn anything. Mm-hmm. You're just going to have this group of players who might have more risk, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've already kind of dealt with that a couple of years ago when we had that, you know, late start to the season, we were wondering, you know, not having access to training facilities when There was the COVID situation. You know, we were worried about how players would be able to react on having to train themselves. So it's something to consider, I guess. But let's talk real quick about what's on the table in terms of negotiations. And we're not gonna cover everything, of course. But obviously, the MLB Players Association is going to push for an overhaul to the existing system, where they're going to try to get their players more money and earn it earlier in their careers, earn more money earlier in their careers. Just everyone knows, under the current structure, players are first eligible for free agency. They have to play 6 full seasons, right? And in their first 3 seasons, they play right around the league minimum. And then after that, after 3 years, they're eligible for arbitration, which is ugly, right? And the MLBPA, the Players Association, wants players to reach free agency after 6 years of service, not full seasons, but just 6 years of service, or after 5 years of service, and if a player is 29 and a half years of age, whichever comes first. They also want players to be eligible for arbitration after just 2 seasons instead of 3. So it's money, right?
Yeah, and it makes sense for the players too.
Sure. Right?
Like, if you're 30 and you still haven't gotten a shot, mm-hmm. you should be allowed to get a shot, mm-hmm. right? Go out, become a free agent. I like a lot of the things the Players Association wants to do. The MLB union is a very unique union. The Players Union is very unique from a legal standpoint. Supreme Court gave them some special permissions that other unions don't have. I do think this gets resolved. I think as far as fantasy goes, the big change is universal DH.
Yeah.
And maybe the change to becoming free agent sooner, because teams will be less inclined, you know, so if they change it to actual years instead of service time, there's going to be less manipulation to do.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
So yeah. we may see less of that. We might, right. Mm-hmm. They might find some other way to screw with people.
Right.
but we might see it. And finally, the universal DH, that's the huge thing. We've mm-hmm. seen it once before. The difference is teams didn't know they were going to have a universal DH in 2020 until after they came back.
Right.
right. So a lot of the NL teams didn't have a real DH because they didn't go into an offseason or 2 or 3 planning on DHs. So I think, you know, immediately there will be some players who immediately shine as an NL DH because the team had a guy that can naturally step into that role. Mm-hmm. There will be teams that don't. They simply don't have a player to step into that role right now because they lost someone to free agency or whatever. They won't have anyone to step into that role. And it's probably going to be a few years before we see every team really having a true DH.
Right.
Or platoon. Like, DH is a weird position to platoon, but I guess you could because you have an excess number of field players. But we're gonna see those increases, but don't expect it just immediately. Predicting NLDH time in 2022 is going to be difficult for a lot of teams because they don't have a natural fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing is maybe you might get a prospect who's like on the fringe of making the team, and then all of a sudden, if there's a universal DH, there you go. Here's 4 or 5 starts in the lineup in a week. So, but yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, it probably helps guys. Like, the guys it helps the most are probably guys like Darren Ruff, mm-hmm. who, like a first baseman, corner outfielder for the Giants, who can swing a hot bat from time to time, mm-hmm. but they strictly platoon him.
Right.
So with a DH spot, you could get him or his counterpart in the lineup more often mm-hmm. to balance your lineup, especially, you know, because you don't want teams to just relief pitcher you to death. But yeah, so you could get Ruff in the lineup more, and it's like it's a weird Giants team that didn't have a lot of natural DHs anyway. But you know, teams that it'll be really weird for are like the Dodgers, who already moved all their pieces around. So you end up with like a Rays situation who use 3 different guys at DH and it doesn't actually help any one of them very much.
Right.
Cause they don't get enough of the playing time. So that'll be interesting. I think it'll also be interesting for NL catchers who can hit, namely like a JT Realmuto, who might instead of just missing those 20 games, 30 games, might DH half of those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a small change, but we may see more catchers getting more playing time. Not like Sal Perez, but something.
Right. And also real quick, another thing on the table is the expanded playoff structure where MLB is looking to have 14 teams qualify, 3 division winners, 4 wild card clubs from each league. And it's going to be, if they do accept this proposal, it's going to be interesting because division winners could actually choose their opponent from the bottom 3 wildcard clubs. So that'd be like really interesting if that happens.
Yeah, it's almost like a reseeding process
Whatever,
or like just skipping the seeding. Like the way it works now, you sometimes run into where the wildcard seed team is way more dangerous. Then, you know, the lower seeded wild card is actually way more dangerous because they were hot coming in and the other wild card team was cold, something like that. So you really want to go after, like, you want to stay away from that team, right? Like they didn't get very far, but the Cardinals would have been a team I avoided because they just couldn't stop winning games.
Yeah. They had that hot streak.
They went this crazy hot streak. I'm like, oh, I'm not playing them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm going to go after someone else. So let's see a little bit of that, but honestly, it's just going to make baseball more fun.
Yeah.
I love the expanded playoffs. I love more team. Like what we need are more teams trying to compete for longer. Expanded playoffs does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so does, I mean, it also helps that Atlanta came completely overhauled their whole roster using the trade deadline and then won a World Series. That helps too.
Sure.
Telling teams that, you know, you can actually win championships this way.
Just about every move they made worked out for them. So it was pretty awesome.
What's funny is they didn't work immediately. It did not work right away.
Right.
It took some time.
But eventually it did. And now they're the world champs, right? Another interesting little twerk here. MLB temporarily scrubbing references to players who were on 40-man rosters off of their social media websites. Almost like in that Avengers movie where Thanos used the Infinity Gauntlet, just snapped his fingers and half the world's population just disappeared just out of nowhere. These references to players on 40-man rosters kind of disappeared off of their MLB social media websites.
Yeah, and they're probably pretty bummed that they didn't remove all the references to the other type of baseball they used last season, right? They really needed that. Like, that's what they really needed to go,
yes.
Right? Like, they didn't need all the 40-man. Like, they really wanted that to disappear. And the snap happened, and it's still around. We found out that they're using 2 different balls. I mean, I think that the MLB, like, scrubbing the references, that's like a union thing. Like, the Players Association, like, the Players Union owns a lot, like, has the rights to all that stuff. So because in MLB and in baseball, it's weird that the teams are one set of licenses and the player names are another.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like this in college football as well, but we've seen the reverse of it. Well, actually, no, this is what we see in college football, right? Like up until very recently, they could, if you think about the old NCAA football games, you could do the teams and their team names and you could do numbers, but you couldn't name players with real names.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They couldn't do that for a long time because they didn't have licenses. They weren't allowed to license their likeness. But anyway, that's what's happening is that the players union owns the licenses to the players. Like they're the ones that give the licenses to the players. And when they're locked out of MLB, they don't give it to MLB.
Right.
So and then, you know, there is the 2 baseball thing.
Yes.
You know, I impressed myself with the joke, the transition. Very
that was
pro.
Great. I got to say, that was nice. Segue, yes.
The problem is it's not actionable fantasy news, right? Like, they use 2 different balls, but we don't know exactly when they used each kind.
Right, right.
And we don't know exactly what the difference was between them. Like we know the difference, but we don't know, like, whether it mattered that much.
Well, supposedly like, the ball that they intended to use, they wanted it to be this dead-end ball, right, that didn't travel as much. But supposedly, due to COVID, the Rawlings production facility couldn't keep up with the demand that they needed for the 2021.
Wait, a supply
season.
Chain problem during COVID? No.
Right? Yeah, go figure. So, yeah, supposedly they just had to use whatever inventory they had from year prior, and that was the juicier ball, the ball that, you know, traveled further. So again, tough to kind of figure out for fantasy because we don't know exactly when or where they used the deadened ball and when they had to switch over to that juicier ball.
Even if MLB told us when they used each ball, right, would you believe them?
I probably
right. Didn't. Like, would yeah, you believe them? Yeah. Right. Like, there's just there's not enough facts there for us to really do anything with it.
You would think it would be smart on their part to track it on their own, since their goal is to try to influence.
Oh, fantasy is the only group that doesn't care. Fantasy baseball is the only one who doesn't care. We can't do anything with it. But regular, like being a regular fan of baseball, being a team, being an executive, being a data designer, you want to know this crap. You want to know all the inputs so you can understand the output. But for fantasy, because we have no way to know how the inputs affected anything and what players even got the other ball and when and how did it affect pitches, we don't know any of that crap. So I'm ignoring it for the most part. I'm remembering it because someone's going to mention it to me again and I need to know that it happened.
Right.
But
remember, supply chain. That's the answer, right? Is the cost.
Yeah, it's like remembering like my brother's last girlfriend's name. Like, I know he had one and I remember that, but I don't remember her name. Like, it was generic. I remember it was like Amanda or Ashley or something.
I wonder if he remembers her name, right? I
mean, yeah, you know, I'm going to remember that there were
he's the ladies, man. He just, you know, moves on. And
yeah, I don't have that many to remember and I still don't. Yeah. But like, that's the thing is I'm going to remember that there were two different balls. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really going to care otherwise. Right. And I remember my brother dated some chick who was different 10 years ago. And I'm sure she was great. I'm sure she is great. And I hope she's happy and has a great family and everything.
There you
go. But she got away from my idiot brother. She's the real winner here.
The one thing we do know is that on June 21st, baseball started to crack down on the sticky stuff. And it did kind of make a difference, right? So, you know, I was looking, you know, because I'm home recovering from COVID, so I had a little election time. So I was looking at some of the offense, you know, from April 1st to June 20th. League batting average was .239. And after that, once they started cracking down after June 21st, league average went up to .248 from then forward. ISO also went up by 10 points once they started to crack down on the sticky stuff. So that we could measure. Is that something that's on your radar or no? Okay.
10 points of ISO just isn't anything.
Yeah.
Right. Like it only affected certain pitchers because we don't know definitively everyone who used it.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone did. There's probably still stuff they are using. Right.
Yeah. They're going to find a way, right?
They're going to find a way. Yes. Right. Some of them might be.
Mm-hmm.
And also it affected some types of pitches more than others. You have to get really granular before you really start getting like valuable, potentially actionable news. When you find like a certain pitcher who was using the stuff and relies on very specific types of pitches, mm-hmm. or you find a hitter who struggled with like high spin slash like rising fastballs. Those are harder to do without the sticky stuff.
Right.
So like you can find very specific things that are, sort of interesting, but there's just not enough. Like it wasn't what, we didn't see. I mean, the one guy who might've been affected by it the most found another reason to not play baseball this year. So like he was probably going to be the biggest story. Over in Los Angeles, that's about it, right? Yeah. Like that's, Gerrit Cole was still really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like even when he struggled a little, he was still really good.
Well, he was definitely affected. Yeah, he was good, but he wasn't, the ace after that. You know, he kind of, after a while, he kind of got better, but there was that time right when they started, the crackdown. And there was also that ugly press conference. Poor guy, felt very, very bad for him when he tried to explain away, and answer questions about it. But I don't know. But why don't we move on? This is going to be just a quick podcast. By the way, we're recording this December 8th, the evening, Wednesday evening. Busy time right before the lockout there, Scott. I mean, it would take us a few hours just to go over every single deal. But talk about the Texas Rangers, who are one of the more busy teams. They made some big moves, signed Corey Seager, 10-year, $325 million contract. Marcus Semien, 7-year, $175 million. That's $25 million per. John Gray, pitcher, formerly of the Rockies, 4-year, $56 million. Even signed Cole Calhoun for a 1-year deal, $5.2 million with a team option. Mets made some big deals, right? Max Scherzer gave him 3 years, $130 million, $43.3 million for a guy who'll turn 38 years old this year. Obviously, still one of the best pitchers in baseball. But also had that dead arm in the playoffs last year. Starling Marte, 4 years, $78 million. Eduardo Escobar, now they need to hire a manager. Scherzer's saying, hey, make it be Buck Showalter, and we'll see he's going to be interviewed. And your Tigers, man, your Tigers. Javier Baez, 6 years, $140 million. I mean, like I said, too many deals to talk about, but, you know, any of these really, you know, strike a chord with you in terms of, wow, this is awesome, or, you know, what was this team thinking?
I mean, first of all, I'm glad you didn't bury the lead with the 1 year deal by the Texans for Cole Calhoun. I think that's the first time I've heard it mentioned out loud. But no, I mean, Cole Calhoun's a, you know, decent player. He's left-handed. He's let off before, whatever. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to see teams make a big splash on free agents before the lockout. And that's a little telling, right? Number one, it's likely telling that they know they are going to play eventually. Right. Because if you think about COVID, they didn't even start negotiating for a while. They didn't even start talking about whether they were going to even play baseball. Certainly no one was getting signed in May last year, right? That wasn't happening. It was just a complete freeze out. So there's a little bit of a good sign there. I think that in Texas, I'm really confused by their strategy right now, because they've added these like impact top of the order bats, and that's cool. But like the rest of their team is still terrible. Like it's really bad. So
a lot of money left. I mean, they only had $28 million in committed to salaries before they made these deals. So they still have plenty of money, and they got that new ballpark. You know, it's only a couple of years old. So maybe they're not done. Maybe Kershaw. Kershaw is from Dallas. Don't assume he's going to go back to the Dodgers. I mean, they might not be done, but I understand that you might be confused. I mean, they still got a long way to go.
I mean, yeah. So they can sign Clayton Kershaw too. So I'll give him Kershaw and Gray. Who are the other three pitchers they're going to sign? Yeah. Right. I mean, the pitching steer still is really rough. Like off the top of your head, like anyone listening right now, off the top of your head, I already gave you John Gray. I'll give you him again. Just try to name the five projected starting pitchers for the Rangers right now. Just try it in your head. Thinking, well, it's John Gray, Dane Dunning, Taylor Hearn, AJ Alexie, who you haven't heard of. I haven't heard of him. Maybe you did. You didn't, though. Spencer Howard, who was a former prospect from the Phillies, who hasn't quite panned out yet, but he was traded last season. So those are the guys. Those are the guys. I don't see it yet. Like, even if you look at the lineup now, after the additions, who leads off for this team? Willie Calhoun? Nick Solak? Andy Ibanez? I mean, this lineup is thin. It has maybe 1.5 good right-handed hitters in it. With Marcus Semien being good and Adolis Garcia being a half, because, you know, we've already seen him come back to earth a little bit.
Sure.
That's the thing that stuck out to me, is what is Texas doing? Like, I feel that they are much further away than these signings would suggest. Now, they did sign younger players, right? I mean, Cole Calhoun's not young, but Marcus Semien's only 31. Corey Seager
must have struck a chord with you, man.
Cole Calhoun is 34. He hasn't played much lately. When he has played, he hasn't played well. That felt like a Texas signing. That made sense.
He fits in. Yes.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. He actually did have a really good season in the
couple
actually
years.
Like he had some power in 2019 and 2020, and then he was hurt for most of 2021 and just didn't hit very well. And his batting average has been terrible. I think the Steamer projection on him, which is like 100 games, batting 227 and slugging 415 with an exactly 100 WRC plus. That sounds right. That's just who Cole Calhoun is now. He's a lefty. You can only play him against righties. He's probably not as fast as he used to be, but whatever. That's what didn't make sense. A lot of the other moves made sense. I think people wanted the Tigers to go after Carlos Correa, and there's still talk that they might. But otherwise, I mean, I think teams made some big splashes, tried to lock in these contracts now because they might be more expensive later. And it's sort of a sign these contracts because I know what it means right now. Like, it's the devil I know, and the new agreement is the devil I don't.
Right.
So generally, you're going to pick the devil you know. So, I mean, I think those were big. You know, the other fantasy relevant one, now that I've rambled on, I think the other fantasy relevant thing I've been thinking about is the Mets almost never stole bases last season. They only had 54. That put them in like the bottom five or bottom six of the league. Well, actually, it was tied for fifth fewest, right? With Minnesota and Baltimore. And Buck Showalter was not known for his aggressiveness on the base paths either. So that could be an issue for Starling Marte.
Right.
Like Oakland was the perfect fit. They just let him run wild.
That's a great point. Yeah. I mean,
that was huge.
Yeah.
And the Mets probably won't. Now they might. New manager. We'll have to see who that new manager is. But they did not. They did not run much in 2021. And I don't think they ran a ton. I'm going to double check right now. They did not run a ton in 2022 or sorry, in 2020, right? They were still in the bottom. What is this? Like bottom seven in the league in stolen bases. This isn't a team that runs. Like they only stole 20 bases in those 60 games and they hit 272 as a team, right? Like they had guys on base. They just didn't run. So that's a concern for me because that's Marte's huge value point. And that's what made him such a great story in Oakland because he was still on the base for you every day.
Right.
And right. Like he single-handedly got people.
And a guy who's like 32 years old when, you know, you think that he's going to kind of slow down at this point, but just running wild last year.
How many roto points did that guy earn in a month? Right. Like across the board, that was huge. So it's, you know, him going to the Mets is probably like the worst possible outcome for him. Not many teams run less than that. Like maybe the Twins and Baltimore, but that was it. So we'll see how that goes. But those were probably my two biggest takeaways. I don't understand what's going on in Texas and that Starling Marte will still be good, but this was probably the worst destination for him.
Yeah. You bring up a great point, especially if a player like a Marte moves from one organization to another and he has that specific skill set that we fantasy players crave and always are looking for, and that's stolen bases. And does that fit in to the style of play of the manager that he's going to be playing for? And like you mentioned, were you happy with the Baez, by the way?
I was. Yeah. I like Javi Baez. I love watching him play. Fantasy-wise, yeah, there's warts. Even real life-wise, there's a lot of warts with the
thumbs down stuff.
Yeah, the extreme aggressive swinging. But is there, like, if you had to name a player in MLB with swag, do you start with Javi Baez? I feel like you start with Javi Baez.
He's top five. Yeah, top three. Yeah, he's
got him, like Andrew McCutchen. You know, a couple other guys, but like those really stood out. At the, you know, he stands out at the top to me. He's just a guy who's fun. I love Javi Baez. I think, you know, fantasy wise, it hurts. You know, he probably gets a little bit of, you know, he gets a little bit of a boost offensively, but not in home runs. So I do think he has as many or more total bases. It's a huge outfield for balls to find the grass. It just also makes it hard to hit home runs.
Right.
One thing I did want to say about Starling Marte before I get too far off, because I just remembered this, and it's just a classic example of the Mets being the Mets and why you should be slightly concerned for Starling Marte. They might not even lead him off. which would severely hamper his ability to steal bases. They might go with their on-base percentage machine, Brandon Nimmo. And if they do that, then Starling Marte is then hitting behind him, which is great for like getting extra RBI.
Right.
It is not great for stealing bases because Nimmo will be sitting on first base because he probably walked there. Mm-hmm. So that's annoying too. So I just wanted to finish airing my grievances about Marte going to the Mets. But at least they drove a dump truck full of money to his house. So
yeah, they got plenty. Cohen's got plenty. I just wanted to bring up Corey Seager. You talked about the Rangers and whatnot. I did check, you know, see if these ADPs changed much from when some of these players signed them, you know, and after. The one thing that was interesting about Corey Seager, you know, his overall ADP didn't change drastically. And we're looking at NFBC ADPs at this stage. But before the signing, his overall ADP was 70. After the signing, it went to 80. So, you know, seems a high-stake player is not too thrilled with him signing with the Rangers. But when you look at his max and min, where he's going for his minimum pick, his max pick, before the signing, he went as low as 33rd overall, which means that's like a third round. And then after the signing, his min pick was 63, which is, and I go by a 12-teamer, sixth round. So seems like the high-stake players not too thrilled with where Corey Seager landed. Of course, there weren't that, you know, I mean, it was a short period of time to look at, but it's just something to take note of.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the real big thing there is, you know, number one, it's not a great spot. Hitting at the top of the Dodger lineup's a lot better than hitting at the top of the Ranger lineup. You know, the new park the Rangers have has shown to be pretty pitcher friendly. It's a big ballpark. It's hard to hit the ball out there. So it's not like he's going to this crazy offensive environment that'll help make up for the loss or for the, you know, sort of the loss of talent around him. Mm-hmm. So that's annoying from, you know, for a lot of reasons. But I think the other thing to remember, and I'm glad you brought up the min and max picks, because it only takes one draft and one person to set min and max picks.
Right.
So I don't look at max picks very often, especially because like it's hard to know exactly why a certain player went that long in that draft. Mm-hmm. But I do look at min picks a lot. Especially because like that's generally telling me like if I have to have a player, when do I need to take him by? And what's interesting is, and this is just a thought experiment, so bear with me for a second. It was 37 and now it's in the 60s. I wonder how many picks before landed between 37 and 60.
Hmm.
Right? We know that one was at 37 and that the ADP was not close to 37.
Right.
So what probably happens, we've got an outlier. We've probably got one person who just like loves Corey Seager.
Could be, yeah.
Right?
Could very well be, yeah.
Like the guy who had a locker next to him in high school kind of thing, right? Like that's like they want, and that like that even impacts ADP. So the like, it's not really a lesson, I guess, but just remembering that it doesn't take much to skew numbers, especially now.
Mm-hmm.
One person picking Corey Seager at 37 probably can adjust someone's ADP right now by a lot. So you don't see a ton of movement at the top because like, even if Acuna slips, right, it doesn't go that far, you know, 10 picks or so,
mm-hmm.
But with guys in the middle rounds, you'll see them slip for like two full rounds in the NFBC. That's like 30 picks. So you will see like bigger variances. And it's just something to keep in mind. Look at that spread. How big is the spread between the min and the max? And how far is that min from the ADP? That'll often give you an idea of players that are maybe not volatile, but are, you know, there's people that just love them and people that hate them. Mondesi is the type of guy who always has a big split between his min and his ADP. Because some drafts he just sits because nobody wants that risk. Right. But it only takes one person. Because one person has to do is believe that that player won't come back to them. One person, right? That's probably what happened with Seager. That person picking at 37 thought Seager won't come back to me and I got to have him. So yep. Just an interesting thing to think about when you're looking at these draft numbers, especially early. One or two people can really mess with numbers.
Yeah. Any other signings, attract your attention. Byron Buxton getting that extension with the Twins for 7 years. I tell you, you know, I really like the way that the Giants have been operating lately. They've re-signed Anthony DeSclafani and Alex Wood. We talked about it in a previous podcast. If you look, DeSclafani last season, 23rd best K-minus walk rate at 60.3%, which is a real good indicator of how well a pitcher is performing. Yeah, they lost Kevin Gausman, but then they had this like under-the-radar kind of signing. They signed Alex Cobb to a two-year, $20 million contract. And Cobb went 8-3, 3.76 ERA in 18 starts, 93 and a third innings for the Angels this past year. So it's those kind of like under-the-radar signings that the Giants do. And they kind of, to me, they seem to be an organization that just has a plan and knows what they're doing.
Yeah, they've got the secret sauce, yeah. Right? Like everything they touch turned to gold, including guys like Brandon Crawford. The production they got out of Brandon Belt last year, like they've been really good with their hitting too. And that if you look at their roster, it is a hodgepodge. Mm-hmm. It is a bunch of 30-something-year-old guys that nobody wanted.
Yeah,
the island of misfit toys.
How did they win 107 games?
Yeah. You know, Joey Bart right now is their youngest projected starter at 25. He's a catcher, but he wasn't a starter for them last season. I have no idea who their youngest starter was last season, but it's a bunch of old guys. Brandon Crawford isn't even the oldest guy. He's almost 35.
Right.
Because Evan Longoria is 36. Like it's a weird roster. So I like them a lot. I like that they have that secret sauce. And it is something I think about in drafts sometimes late where I'm like, well, if the Giants took a chance on a guy, why not? Mm-hmm. Right. Like I'll take a look, right. Everything else they're doing is good. Right. Like I'm looking more at Tyler Beattie now than I ever was before. I'm looking more at Alex Cobb now more than I ever was before. Doesn't mean it's a lot, but it's more, right? Because they took other broken toys and made them great. Why can't they at least make Alex Cobb or Tyler Beattie interesting? Right? They don't even have to be good. They just have to be interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think they can do. So, well, it'll be interesting to see how much longer they keep the secret sauce going.
Right.
You know, that's really big. I think the last thing I'll say about the offseason and, you know, the way that it's progressing, what I'm wondering about the most is, so like the shortstops we knew were going to be like a big domino to fall. A lot of big name shortstops, still two left, right? Story and Correa still out there. It'll be interesting to see where they go. There's all kinds of rumors out there. It'll be very interesting. What struck me is there are a lot of power hitting corner infield and outfield in the free agent pool right now with Chris Bryant, Nick Castellanos, Freddie Freeman, Kyle Schwarber, Anthony Rizzo. Nelson Cruz doesn't play a field position, but it's the same concept. Power hitter. Eddie Rosario. Like all these guys still available. Many of them similar types of players. They do what they do different ways. Like the way Castellanos gets to his power numbers is a lot different than the way like Kyle Schwarber gets to his. And you know, the underlying stats that go with it, like Schwarber's a big walk guy, Castellanos isn't. There are those like twists for each player, but there's a bunch of them. And I am really curious to see how they get sort of sorted out. Hmm. What domino falls first? Which one of them sits around? We see this pretty commonly with this type of player, this corner infield, corner outfield. We also see it with closers. One of them gets left out. Like it's musical chairs and one of them gets left out. It doesn't sign till the very end of the free agent, like right till the very end of spring training, or maybe not even then. That'll happen to like one of these guys. Hmm. I'm not sure who it is yet, but one of them, maybe a guy like Conforto or Rosario. Mm-hmm. Although Rosario had the nice playoffs to like bring him a little bit more back in focus. Rizzo is another one who struggled a bit last year, who might not be getting the contract he's looking for. You know, are the teams with money looking for a first baseman, or would they rather go another route for a first baseman? Because there's a bunch of other ones. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Freddie Freeman is a better choice. Chris Bryant could play first base. There's no reason Nick Castellanos couldn't play first base. You know, Schwarber, obviously they've put him at first base before. And really the only one who can't is Nelson Cruz, because I don't think he has a glove.
Didn't he play the field last year a couple of times for the Rays? I think he might have played first base.
Yeah, but, and they probably they probably hoped it was a strikeout or a home run, right? Right. They don't want that ball. They don't want anyone to throw it to him. They don't want him fielding out there, for God's sake. They just need a guy to stand at the base.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see if he where he played. Just one game at first base for the Rays, of course. I'm going to just give you a couple questions, and then we're going to move on. Where do you think Correa signs? I say he goes back to the Astros.
I'm going to say Yankees or Tigers.
Wow.
I still believe in my Tigers making a big splash, and they still could use help in the infield. They could still use a guy like Correa. It's not like they're poor. They could absolutely do this. I think they're ready to go all in.
And where does Story go? Trevor Story. Seattle, maybe?
I mean, Seattle made sense to me as well. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be shocked if, like, the Astros went for something like that, because they're not necessarily trying
Correa,
to get it. Yeah. I mean, they just need a guy for a little while longer, mm-hmm. right? They don't need a young guy to, like, sort of rebuild around, like maybe the Tigers do. The Astros are like, all right, we lost a piece. We need to replace it. And so they could absolutely get Trevor Story and lose basically nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, long-term, they probably do, but short-term, they don't. The next 3 to 5 years, like, their window, I don't think they lose anything. So that makes the most sense to me. And, of course, the Mariners, up-and-coming team, they could probably use him too.
Yeah, they signed Robbie Ray. So, I mean, you know, had a nice year last year and looking to build upon it. So we'll see, but it will be interesting. And Freddie Freeman, any chance you think that he's not going to sign with the Braves?
I mean, I think there is a very real chance. This is already further than I thought this would go. But here we go. I mean, that's what's going on. I guess he still could be not. I mean, I'm very intrigued by this, because he's a great player, and I'm surprised that Atlanta let it get to this point.
Mm-hmm. Yankees need a first baseman. If it's not him, could be Matt Olson. And then Anthony Rizzo, like you mentioned before, could be a fallback for him. But we'll see. It'll be very interesting. We'll take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll talk about a few players that I noticed and I want your opinion on that had some pretty good numbers from the Arizona Fall League. And we'll talk about them right after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back. Joe Galina and Scott Chu, Hacks and Jacks. Just wanted to take a quick look at a couple of players from the Arizona Fall League, get your opinion on them there, Scott. Do you follow the Arizona Fall League?
Usually I do. I did not follow it closely this year. I was super bummed I missed out on First Pitch Arizona, which is always a great event. If anyone ever gets a chance, I definitely think you should go. But I usually do follow it, just, you know, even just a couple of players. I mean, a lot of things that happen there, are noise. It's mostly there for just scouting purposes, but there are some interesting things that happen, and it can give you some names to look at that maybe you'd never looked at before.
Right. Well, one guy, Bryson Stott, second base shortstop for the Phillies, 24 years old, got some power, some speed, had some good stats in limited AAA action, also had a nice season in the Arizona Fall League. And there's whispers that, hey, you know, Didi Gregorius, the incumbent shortstop for the Phillies, had an off year last year. And if he gets off to a slow start, rumors that this guy Bryson Stott might have a shot at getting some playing time with the big league club next year.
I would be quite surprised to see him put up like a lot of meaningful time. But I mean, it's not entirely unheard of for their former first round pick. I mean, he could play. I mean, I think that he could be a factor at some point after he gets called up, but he's playing for probably less than half a season. They'd probably much rather that Didi Gregorius be useful, especially because they can't platoon it, right? Because Stott is also left-handed. So you can't just like platoon him with Didi. You're basically going to use one or the other. So I wouldn't be shocked if they do keep him down. What I like about Stott is, I mean, the same thing I like about not necessarily a lot of guys, but a lot of players I do like, hit tool. He's got hit tool. Love players with a good hit tool. His is a future 55. That doesn't look like it's great, especially when you look at people, you know, you see a lot of like raw power of 60, speed 60. Why don't we see hit tool 60? We just don't, because it's hard. Like that's a major leaguer. You know, most like that's when you start really seeing a lot of 60 hit tools, right? Wander Franco's an uber prospect because he had like a 70 hit tool. We just don't see that on future value. But with Stott, we do, and we see some decent power as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, we haven't seen like the gaudy home run numbers in the minors, and we didn't see him. I mean, he had a really small sample in AAA, like you mentioned. We didn't see him hit for a lot of power, but we did see him get on base. And I do love the plate discipline in the minors, right? Walks plenty. Walks at least 10% of the time. We've seen him walk in smaller samples, like 95 plate appearances in single A, he walked 23% of the time, which was just as much as he struck out. Even in his rough 10 game sample in triple A, he still walked a ton. He walked as much as he struck out. He just couldn't find power yet. I do think he can do that in triple A next year. And if you start seeing him hit for power in triple A next year, especially combined with maybe Didi Gregorius struggling, that's really when your Bryson Stott alarm should start going off.
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep him on your radar. Dave Dombrowski, president of baseball operations for the Phillies. Maybe he's just trying to light something under Didi Gregorius. But, you know, he kind of said that there is a shot. You know, he's going to have a shot if he has a good spring. But I see what you're saying. Maybe just someone just to keep on our radar and our watch list. Here's another guy, and he's a Paisan, Dominic Canzone, outfielder for the Diamondbacks. Now, sometimes when, if I'm looking for a prospect who has a chance of getting some playing time, I look at the Diamondbacks or the Pirates, teams that really have nothing to lose but give their prospects a chance to play. You know, they're not going to spend a ton in free agency. But you look at this guy, Dominic Canzone, retooled his swing this past year so that he hit more balls in the air, got a little bit more aggressive at the plate, and it worked out for him. Hasn't played above double A ball, so I'll give you that much. But if you look what he did once he got to double A, 35 games batting .354, had a real strong time in the Arizona Fall League, had a .319, .397, .507 triple slash. I just think that maybe he's somebody that as the season progresses and as the Diamondbacks, I mean, they're not going to win a ton of games this year, but they might have an opening in the outfield position, might get some at-bats and might do something.
Yeah, there's a lot of there are some outfielders in the Arizona system, but like nobody really stands out. Like, I guess the only guys really ahead of him would be like Alec Thomas, right? So Alec Thomas is a pretty well-regarded outfield prospect. He'd probably be coming up more. He'd probably be coming up quicker. He's a former college guy, so he's ready a little quicker. He's left-handed. He's kind of He's like weirdly small. He's like 5'11", but he only weighs 175, young kid. So we'll see what happens there. I did like what I saw. I like seeing lower K rates, like a sub 20% K rate is awesome. A 10% walk rate to go with it, also awesome. Obviously the stats all stand out. He's really succeeded well in almost every, like pretty much every stop he's been to, right? In 2019, he did well in rookie. He did well in low A. He came in 2021. He did well in high A. He's done well in triple A. I really like that kind of growth. You like seeing guys, eventually he is going to struggle, but I mean, I do think it's interesting. He's a guy that even in a deep, like in a very deep dynasty, like these 20 and 30 team dynasties, you know, you might be able to add while he's still out there. Cause he might be, he's that type of player. He's not well, you know, he's not well known.
Right.
He's older, he's 24. So, you know, that works out. Like he might be still available, but like in a normal, like a 12 team dynasty league, this is just like a name. This should be marked down in your little notes as name I've heard before. You heard it today. And if we're talking about it again next year, that's a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. Juan Yepes, Cardinals, first baseman, third baseman, outfielder. Obviously Cardinals are set at first base with Paul Goldschmidt and set at third base with Nolan Arenado. We talked about a potential universal DH in the NL, and you know this is a guy that might benefit from it. Had 7 home runs in the Arizona Fall League, held his own as he was promoted last season, batted 270 in AA. When he got to AAA, batted 289 overall in the two leagues. Had 27 home runs in 111 games. Like I said, had really a lot of success in the Arizona Fall League, made a lot of mechanical adjustments and worked out a lot with coaches in double and triple A, and it paid off for him. You know, like I said, universal DH, this guy might have a chance of getting some big league at bats this year. Also a guy that was a Cardinal that was in the Arizona Fall League, Lars Nootbaar, who also had some big league experience last year. But I don't know. I think that Yepes could leapfrog over him. So we'll see. We'll just keep him on our radar at this point.
Yeah, I actually do think he could be up pretty early if they get the DH, right? He's another guy that plays like corner infield, corner outfield, which means on one hand, there are a lot of spots. On the other hand, there aren't any spots on this team. It's almost sort of like a problem that, you know, they've had this problem in the past where they have more players than they have spots. So the DH is a big deal, right? That'll let them rotate these guys in and out between O'Neill, Carlson, you know, Harrison Bader to an extent. He's a center fielder, so he doesn't necessarily, you know, rotate with these guys as much. Goldschmidt and Arenado, you can find enough off days for them to potentially see Juan Yepes be impactful. He's not like a draft guy. He's just another of like, I've heard this name. If I hear he gets called up, I should pay attention to that.
Yeah. And obviously the Cards think enough of him. He actually was on the 40-man roster for their wild card game. Obviously didn't see any action. But, yeah, like I said, just keep him on your radar. Last guy I'll bring up is Red Sox prospect Tristan Casas, first baseman, third baseman, 6'5", 250 pounds of muscle. Killed it in the Arizona Fall League. Batted 372 and led the league with a 495 OBP. Before that, he led Olympians with 8 RBI and tied for the lead with 3 home runs in the Olympics as well. A real student of the game, and despite his natural power abilities, he isn't consumed with hitting home runs, right? He knows that as long as he keeps working on becoming a complete hitter, the home runs will come. And you look at the Red Sox, I mean, if they don't bring back Kyle Schwarber, who supposedly they have some interest in still bringing back, but, you know, might get tired of waiting on Bobby Dalbec to really fulfill his potential. So Casas could see some action in the big leagues this season.
Yeah, and Casas has a much better hit tool upside than Dalbec ever will.
Right.
They are similar in the power department, and they're not going to, like, run ever. I like Casas a lot more just because the plate discipline is so good. Mm-hmm. Strikeouts just aren't the same kind of problem for him, right? I mean, he kept a 19% strikeout rate the entire year, which was, you know, 371 plate appearances between the two levels. I think that if he came up now, he'd be a decent hitter now. I don't think they'll bring him up quite yet, but the fact that he's been to AAA means he probably will see some time. The question is just how much of it. And again, like I love seeing, I mean, this was really a breakout season for him in that he was already regarded as a prospect, but to see the dropped strikeout rates and the elevated walk rates, that's really what, you know, that's what's really doing it for me. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm loving to see is that combo, because that combo can survive. Right. Dahlbeck's combo of low hit tool, like lots of strikeouts. Yes, he walks a lot, but because he strikes out so much, he's just, there's too many holes in that swing. He's easy to take advantage of. Cassis, big guy, but does a much better job reading the strike zone, a better job covering up the holes in his swing. So I'm excited about him. And I think he eventually supplants Dahlbeck.
Yeah.
He's just a better version. They're both big left-handed power hitting guys, but Cassis is better.
Right.
In just about every way.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, that slams the lid on things for today. Scott, just wanted to have a quick visit. Our next show should drop on December 23rd, just before Christmas. And we hope that the owners give us a present, unlock the doors, and let their players back in. We'll see until then. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Galina. Follow my buddy Scott at If The Chew Fits. You could follow our podcast at Hacks and Jacks PL. Subscribe to our podcast. Leave us a nice review. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. Thanks for tuning in. Check us out on December 23rd. And in the meantime, happy everything, everyone, and we'll see you next time.